Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
All right, say the thing, Dan.
What's up, IL Preps Nation? How we doing today?
IL Preps Nation or just Prep Nation?
What's up, Preps Nation? How we doing today?
We're getting very specific with our branding. Dan, it is really exciting to be doing this. We're doing this in person. We're recording at 1:38 p.m. on Thursday, September 12th. This podcast is going to post on Friday morning, so do not hold us responsible for any commitments that come in between now and when this podcast posts that won't be discussed. We have so much to talk about. We just had our 81st commitment in the class of 2026 right before we press record. Harrison Morris going to Johns Hopkins, the attackman from St. Anne's Belfield. By comparison, at this time last year, we had 50 commits in the class of 25. And 2 years ago, we had just 28 commits in the class of 24. We didn't have our first commitment in the 24 class until September 4th. And by September 4th, I think that there had been 11 or 12 players in the class that committed. What do you attribute the acceleration to?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know that there is any one specific thing that you can necessarily put your finger on and say, this is 100% why. I do think that, you know, each year of precedent on this side of the rule change from 9-1, people are becoming more familiar with how to navigate the process to be in a position to be able to make a decision quickly, that you don't feel rushed, right? And so I think there's a difference between, like, making a decision with somewhat urgency and rushing into something while you feel, you know, uninformed or anything like that. And I think for the most part, and from everybody that we've had the chance to talk to already, it feels like they just already had a vision for what they wanted and then were able to kind of quickly go through that process and end up with the end result, which is, you know, a commitment.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think that generally speaking, it's just market dynamics. Every market, so to speak, right, class year of players is going to be distinct in its own right. Like, for instance, I remember you saw a lot of very fast commitments in the class of 2022, and a huge part of that was because guys couldn't take visits. So it was really easy to schedule Zooms and everything else that you felt like you were going to need in order to make your decision. Whereas with the class of 23, I remember there was a huge spike in activity in mid-October, and that was because if guys had planned to take five visits into five distinct geographies over the course of five weekends, well, you would basically take those from the second weekend in September through the second weekend in October, and then you'd make your decision, which was why that third week of October is when you saw so many of those guys commit. I think that, you know, the 24 class that we talked about was really interesting because Ryan Dunkel being at the top of the class, not having played that summer, and then being the first player in the class to commit because he was kind of always going to go to Virginia was an interesting element. And then things followed kind of accordingly. With this group, I agree with you. I think there was a clear notice among the 26s of an accelerated process from the 25s versus the 24s. And so maybe there was a little bit more emphasis among those families over the course of this summer to be ready to make a decision if an opportunity arose. I also think that some of the stuff around the house settlement created like a little bit of psychology in terms of like, oh, if there are roster caps, that means that they're going to be recruiting smaller classes and we need to take, you know, the first opportunity that comes our way. So I agree with you. It's hard to put any particular thing on it, but it does bear watching, specifically with respect to do things slow down faster than they did either, you know, in mid-October, once coaches get to a point where they're like, well, we're going to see you play again in 2 weeks, so let's let this sit and then we'll revisit it in late November. Or are we going to continue to see the continued acceleration, you know, that we've already seen in the first 12 days?
And I personally, I think I'm in the second, I'm in the latter there. I feel like right now we're in amongst another portion where we're going to get another wave of commitments of people that
that's definitely true.
They decided they were going to go see three or four schools or whatever, and now you're reaching to that end point of that time, and it's decision time. And obviously, like, again, I like the difference between rushed and urgency. There's a lot of reasons to be urgent about it. Not only do you want to put, you know, sort of a wrap the bow on your experience and your recruiting process, but coaches want to know how to go about their next step as well. And so there's some sort of element of, you know, urgency that, you know, is starting to set in.
Let's swing back to the last week of August. over the course of a week, you rolled out 225 3-stars, 136 4-stars, 25 stars, and then on the last day, you ranked them 1 to 100. This was your first time overseeing the rankings process of a class from soup to nuts, which is an expression that I love. What do you think? What do you have to say about kind of the entirety of the experience?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's obviously like really robust is really a quick thing that comes to mind. But I think overarching, it's, you know, there's just so many talented players and the geography of the game is continuing to grow. And, you know, like you have different players, guys from Cassia Hall and, you know, sort of, you know, these one-off sort of geography places. And, you know, you have a Gartner that's headed to Ohio State from West High School in Tennessee. And I think it's cool to see that aspect of things playing out. But on top of it, like just the overall talent across the board and knowing that really the game is in a great spot with so many young players that are continuing to grow. And I feel like every year you see some sort of viral clip and somebody like a Kyle Harrison chimes in and is like, man, 20 years ago, like kids these age were not doing this. And then now you factor in some of that geography and all of that type of stuff. And I think it's just really cool to see, you know, where the game is and the future stars of tomorrow kind of panning out as it happens in front of our eyes.
At the beginning of August, and folks have seen most of these videos that we produced already, if you're listening to this, I would assume that you've checked out the Q-Collar position ranking brain trust videos, Protect Your Brain with Q-Collar, that we recorded in early August. And that set the baseline for how our staff viewed the landscape. We probably name checked, I don't know, 150 kids over the course of a couple hours, maybe 200, I don't know.
Yeah, we talked for 3 hours. We created a board that had 99 players on it by the time we did the count.
Well, that was just the whiteboard.
Correct, and that was really the basis of the start, but the number of players that we got into beyond that, obviously, like, you know, was immense.
So between when we recorded that video and then when you and I kind of divided up the coach conversations that we were going to have, you put together an Excel spreadsheet that I think had about 450 players on it. And once you and I said, all right, ready, break, go have these meetings. And we did a couple of them together in person, and that was really productive and useful. I think in total, we talked to coaches from 24, 25 different staffs. I think it was roughly even split 12-12, somewhere in that neighborhood. What I expressed to you as being the thing that I wanted to feel best about was, let's make sure we're not missing any no-brainers, right? And there's an element to which you can't really know that until after the recruitment starts. I do think throughout the conversations, we probably added 50 to 60 guys that were notable, but not necessarily, you know, top of the Power 100 ranking type players. So felt good about that in terms of where we started versus where we finished. How do you feel now? I know that there are a couple of guys that you wish you knew a little bit more about who've already committed since, but how do you feel about the coverage, the percentage of guys that we knew landscape-wide based on some of these, you know, this first 12 days of commitments?
Yeah, I feel really good about it. Obviously, like, there's going to be a few guys that kind of slip through for whatever reason, whether it's our sample, our, you know, events that we missed them at or whatever. And then, you know, sometimes, like, that's just bound to happen. And those are always going to be guys that I personally, like, you know, lose sleep over, because we know that we want to have identified as many of people as possible and have a really just as robust of a understanding as we possibly can. But in the process of aiming for perfection, you're going to have, you know, a few of those guys that kind of fall through, and then it just becomes, okay, what's the next step with
totally
them?
Yeah.
And but overall, like, from an overarching, like, kind of zoomed out spot, I think that, you know, we did a really good job of kind of identifying those guys. And then once you kind of have that group, there's a lot of different arguments that can be made for, you know, why a guy should be over this guy or so on and so forth. And you get to that area of, you know, splitting hairs, so to speak. And at that point, it's a little bit of a beauty is in the eye of the beholder as well. And, you know, and that's where, like, I think that's one thing that's a little bit different than in previous renditions is, like, of those 450 guys on that board, like, we could play some sort of game where you throw out a name and I throw out, like, an analysis in 2 seconds.
For sure. For sure. So before getting into some of those games, how do you describe the feedback that you received? And what was it like to be the recipient of the feedback?
Yeah, it's I would describe it as a spectrum, everywhere from, like, hey, I think that you guys did a really good job, maybe this is one that, like, take another look at, to, like, ah, oh, you guys are the worst, you know? And ultimately, like, the honest truth of everything is probably somewhere in the middle, right? And so, like, obviously there's going to be some guys and people that get upset, and we understand that. Like, we get that it is a really high-stress time for a lot of the kids that are going through this process. It's the most important decision that they've had the opportunity to be the charge of, right? Like, when it comes time to maybe a high school decision, sure, they get involved or whatever, like, or maybe playing for a club team or, you know, so on and so forth. Like, they may be able to weigh in on things, but at the end of the day, like, mom and dad are typically guiding those conversations. And then the college search becomes the first time that they really get to kind of, you know, embark on their own journey. And it starts with that, like, searching process. So that alone is stressful without lacrosse, right? And then you go and factor in, okay, where can I play lacrosse? Who wants me? Who do I have mutual interest with? And that, you know, obviously adds another element of it. And then you factor in, like, scholarship dollars, and you factor in roster cuts and, you know, all this extra noise that, you know, we totally get that it creates a high stress moment where guys, you know, are going to be prone to some sort of emotional reaction. And we get that. And, you know,
well, and we can't have it both ways, right? We can't want them to, quote unquote, matter and then be upset if folks get upset about what they reflect. I do want to drill down on that idea of them mattering, though, because I've seen a lot of conversation about that in terms of, like, the inside lacrosse rankings don't matter. And it's a kind of backward point, because the implication is that coaches don't care about the rankings. And to some degree, that is true. It's because their opinions differ from what the individual, the final product, so to speak, is. But in the sense that they matter, it's because they are a reflection of what we were told the consensus opinion of these individuals are, right? So the point is, number one, they do care because they care about how their opinion deviates from the market, meaning that, you know, when a coach sees the rankings come out, he looks at it. And if there's a guy who's in the 70s that he thinks is the best player in the class, he gets fired up, because now all of a sudden that's a reflection of his peers thinking that that player is not as good as he himself does. And so that gives him some leeway or some opportunity to recruit that guy and that player and, you know, maybe not have to spend as much scholarship dollars on him, or, you know, maybe compete against a different class of program than he might otherwise have expected to. And then the inverse is also true. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that so in the way that it is a reflection of what the market is and what the market will be, what those forces are and how they play out, yeah, of course there are going to be deviations, and that's where ranking the class the second and third time is meant to correct for, right? And there are guys who are in higher demand. I used the example of Matt Higgins last year. Like, the way in which Matt Higgins' recruitment unfolded and what happened as a result of his decision to commit to Maryland suggests that he was actually way more sought after than what his ranking reflected, which I think was number 16 overall. And so, like, that's an example of something that, you know, regardless of whether or not we thought he was the 16th best player, the consensus feedback that we got leading up to that process and the way in which it informed the rankings was probably, like, a little bit off, right? And so that's how you adjust it and continue to move forward. So it's a really interesting kind of dynamic, and that's what it is. It is dynamic. It changes every single time you do it. It changes with every single conversation, and you go forward from there. 225 three-star players before September 1st. It's the first time we've ever done it. Why?
Well, I have two kind of specific things that come to mind. The first of which is, and this is a relatively new feature that we have on insidethecross.com, go check it out if you haven't already, is a class rankings, class rating system that is just built on the commitments. And so it's a full computer system. You can talk a little bit about it, but in addition to that is, and really this is one of my biggest motivations for all of this, like what excites me, like what gets me out of bed, is the aspect of fanhood. Like fanhood in college lacrosse too often dies when spring stops, right? Like college lacrosse fans go off and they go do whatever else, and you know, they don't think about it again until, you know, February 1st, and their team is, you know, posting about being back at practice and all that type of stuff, and you start to regenerate excitement. And like in an ideal world, it just goes from you're rooting for your team on the field in the spring to you're rooting for your team off the field in the summer with recruiting battles against the same teams that you were just recruiting. You were just rooting for them against on the field, right? And so now they're all going, and for 99% of the time, like the ACCs are battling against other ACCs for those top players. And so like to be able to kind of put some precedent on who we see as those guys as they start to make commitments, so that college lacrosse fans have some sort of context for who just joined their program, is really important to me. And that's like one of the biggest drivers of the three stars, is not everybody's going to be a five or a four, but there's still some really good players out there beyond that, that everybody should know as they start to make their commitments, like, oh, that's a guy that I should be excited about.
When it comes to the math, the more data that goes into it, the more specific the outputs can be. And so effectively, Patrick McEwen built a system that incorporates the ranking position for the top 100 players, as well as the star system for 5, 4, and 3. And so the more robust the three-star pyramid layer is, the more teams get incorporated into having like a qualified ranked player once he commits. And then the best part about doing it before 9-1 is the dynamic, right? You can see how a class gets built and how it compares to other classes on a day-to-day basis as the commitments start to roll in, as opposed to if you wait until everybody's already committed, then it's basically just a one-time event. And so that was kind of what we were going for. It's the way it works in football and basketball. And I think we need to promote it more on social media now that you're starting to see like a baseline and then starting to see those kind of like daily shifts against it. But it's definitely one of the coolest parts of having such a robust reflection of the class of 26 relative to prior years.
Certainly. And I mean, literally, it's like you enter in one big name and it's so cool to go and see, and we get like a different graphic image that like on the back side of things, you know, is a little sneak peek for us, but it's very cool to see visually the way that that, you know, tracks out and changes from even just one player getting entered in there.
Correct. So I think, you know, I don't know that this conversation is going to be best served by talking about the four stars and the five stars, because A, we've already talked about the majority of them in those videos, so if you haven't seen it, go check it out. B, we're going to be talking about a handful of them as we start talking about how these classes have come together since September 1st. But there is one kind of decision that I do want to dive in on, and you and I wrote about it on August 31st. The number one versus number two decision. Dylan Faison versus James Gillis. And I think it's an interesting comparison in a lot of ways and for a lot of reasons, but the biggest thing was, as you and I were having these conversations with college coaches in mid-August, after the first one, it became clear, the question is, Gillis or Faison, which one are you taking? And so that's what we did. We started every conversation, and this was completely coincidental, but it ended up being that like the score never got more than one position apart from each other. So, you know, it wasn't as if Faison got out to a 12-0 lead and then Gillis stormed back with 12 in a row. It was, you know, 1-1, 2-2, 3-3. In addition to that, like, you and I are kind of split on the answer as well. What was your point of view on that debate? And ultimately, we went with Faison number one and Gillis number two. Gillis remains uncommitted. Faison obviously committed to Notre Dame in March as he got a football offer. What's your reflection on what it means for the class in total and what we should expect to see as James Gillis' recruitment continues?
Yeah, I don't know how much it changes Gillis' recruitment. I think he was going to garner a ton of interest either way, and I think Faison obviously already committed to Notre Dame, but I think outside of those factors, it was really two things that we kind of continued to come back on, and I think the most important of them was just Faison's ceiling, right? I think at the end of the day, like, if you were able to maximize the lacrosse potential out of the athlete that he is, it's going to create, you know, just a really dynamic player from the very get-go. But James, like, obviously there's so much to love there. And so it really did create a really difficult conversation going back and forth. And there's so much to, you know, kind of lean on. And one thing that people wanted to talk about a lot was just the difference in spring ball as well. And so, you know, James is going to be, you know, just a little bit more challenged on a day-in and day-out basis and in a game-in and game-out basis as well, playing at Chaminade. And so, like, obviously that was a factor as well. But again, like, we just kept coming back to that, like, ceiling aspect of things. And I think that another thing that was kind of just, like, worth noting is in those conversations that you're alluding to, while everybody kind of saw, like, ah, yeah, it's probably those two, and, like, you could see it, I felt like there was more conviction in some of the Faison votes, so to speak, where it was just, like, there's no way it's not him. Whereas with James, it was, like, certainly, ah, you could make that argument.
I agree. I think that there was nobody that was, like, Gillis is the clear number one, and then there's a wide gap, and then whoever else is number two. That wasn't the case with Faison. There were a couple of votes where it was like, I think Faison's number one, and then there's a wide gap. And so, yeah, from that standpoint, the margin was a factor. And to your point, or to address one thing you said, like, I don't think James Gillis's recruitment was going to be affected by where he was ranked at all. What I was referring to is, you know, we haven't heard hide or hair out of, you know, where he's visited and everything else that goes along with that. You know, my supposition has been it was probably between Notre Dame and Duke. Maybe Virginia can get into the mix, and I would be surprised if there was another, except that, you know, potentially maybe an Ivy League school or two would be able to get him to come on campus. I do think he's going to visit Duke this upcoming weekend, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was a decision not too far on the back of that, and really interested to see what ultimately he decides, because, you know, as we're going to talk about, given that there have been a handful of players, a handful of five stars that have already made their commitments, the class ratings and the class rankings are starting to solidify in ways that are a little bit surprising. So let's jump into it. You want to talk about some commitments for the next 20 minutes before we get on the road?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Three players committed on September 1st, and by September 2nd, both Duke and Carolina had committed a pair of long poles. What did that tell you about their approach, and what did it tell you about the class?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this was something we probably expected just on the feedback from the class in general, feeling like it was a little bit light on defenders, and then the fact that some of the academies had already sunk their teeth into few, including A.J. Theodorakis, who was headed to Army, Matt Cronin headed to Navy, so both of those schools had already grabbed the defenders, and Air Force at the time, I don't believe, had any, but you knew that they were, you know, kind of starting to sink their teeth in. Shout out Air Force. They're putting together a nice little class there as well. But really, I thought that it was going to mean that the dominoes defensively started to kind of, you know, roll pretty quickly. And that's exactly what happened. And you saw Wynn Chandler headed to Duke. You saw George Kelly heading to Duke. And then you saw Jackson Bond headed to North Carolina.
And Carter Martin.
Correct, and Carter Martin, who Carter Martin had some geography on his side and probably grew up, you know, in that Tar Heel nation. And, you know, for him, I think it was one that was, you know, was a quick decision because of that. But, yeah, we knew that that was kind of going to be the case, and then we saw those defenders start to fly off. And I'd say it was pretty much on the expectation of what we had thought would happen, but even then it might have been quicker than what I personally was realized.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was, you know, Grady Taylor committing to Cornell at midnight basically of September 1st last year. I think that there was some thought of, like, are we going to see another midnight commitment? And we didn't. And so in that respect, it felt like, you know, the morning of September 1st, there was, you know, kind of that tapping your watch gif waiting for or the Little Rascals, where he's tapping the table, waiting for the first domino to fall. But I do think that the to your point, in terms of the prioritization, what was interesting is, so Duke took those two polls, and they haven't taken a commitment since. And I'm told that they haven't hosted visits yet, and that they are hosting visits this coming weekend. I mentioned Gillis. I think they're bringing a loaded group to Durham. Meanwhile, Carolina is now up to 7 commits in the class of 26. Now, one is a 25 reclass in Michael Savage, but they took 10 players in the class of 24 and 12 in the class of 25. Their 25 class is either number one or number two, depending on which of the two formulas you prefer from the Inside Lacrosse class rankings system. While there's probably also still like a little bit of fluctuation that might happen in that 25 class, given Wyatt Bowman's decision to play football at Syracuse, or possibly, I don't know, maybe they're done. They being Carolina. But yeah, what do you make of how active Carolina was out of the gate?
Yeah, I think it's a smart strategy to be really aggressive early and sink your teeth in and, you know, trying to start to generate a ton of momentum behind that class, because you start to create this element, like a snowball element of other guys like, oh man, they got him and him and him. I could see myself playing with him in the future. And, you know, maybe they are really kind of building something out of this class. Like, I could see myself joining that. And so from that perspective, like, I think it's a smart strategy, and they have 3 guys in the top 100, and including a 5-star in Timmy Punkin, who just announced earlier this week. And so, yeah, I think it's really shaping out to be an impressive class. And obviously a couple of those defenders falling as early as they did, just does exactly what it helps reduce the stress on that position, and then lets you kind of focus elsewhere and really kind of, you know, sink your teeth into building that class, knowing, okay, we've got a couple poles in the boat already. We have a short stick demon in the boat already. Let's go really, you know, round out the offensive side of things. And it seems to me like they've done a really good job of that based on the Power 100.
The other two ranked players that they brought in were Henry Boyd, a middie from Macaulay School who plays with 3D Georgia, that we've been watching pretty closely for more than a year, and then Charlie Cacciabatto, the inside finisher from St. Anthony's and Long Island Express, who we've called the best American goal scorer in the class. And your favorite aspect is his two-handedness, which is not something you see very often, especially from a righty as an inside finisher.
Yeah, it's so impressive. I mean, like, I told when he committed, I told you, like, I really don't know. He's so perplexing to me because I don't know, you know, the best way that he's deployed other than getting inside and, like, moving around. But you don't see a whole ton of that at the Division I college level from Americans that also don't at least bring, like, at least a threshold of dodging ability.
So which is why you're going to... I don't know if you're old enough to totally appreciate this comparison, but the old heads listening to it are, because I think there's an incredibly good comparison with one notable exception. So I think the best comp is Matt Posgay. Do you remember him from Virginia?
Yeah.
So the distinction is that he's an attackman, not a midfielder. Posgay was a midfielder.
Right.
It would run out of the box, get on the crease, and just score a million goals, and did it as a pro as well. Maybe that's ultimately Charlie's role.
I've heard him compared to Jay Carlson like, several times, including by his coaches. And I think that is a good one. But again, like, Jay was really crafty. He probably was a slightly better dodger than what we would be giving him credit for. But again, I think that that's like the skill set you're finding is just like a relentless motor. Jay was a little bit more crafty and finished with his right hand. But Charlie does both of those things with his left hand, like back to the goal finishes, like
roll off the crease in that, like, you know, 8-yard intermediate range, high to high jump shot.
And his teammates totally know that they can jam him. Like, he catches everything. So they have a ton of confidence throwing it into him. And yeah, I mean, again, like, it's going to be on the coaches to figure out how to deploy him. Luckily, I don't have that, you know, task. I just get to be a fan of him and hope that he gets out there and has a million goals. But his highlight tape, if you haven't seen it as a fan listening to this, is well worth the few minutes to go track that thing down.
Well, and not only that, but also you're going to see a bunch of cause turnovers on the ride, which is, you know, whether it's Max Guanzani or Ian Laviano, right? Like, that oftentimes is one of those key differentiators. Jay Carlson, obviously, how many times did he pick off the goalie's pass while standing on the crease and then just dunk it right in? On September 3rd, Harvard joined the chat, starting off with Brian Burke, Carson Winters, Carson Miller, Burke a defender, Winters a attackman, and Miller a beast athlete midfielder, and have since added long stick midi Michael Brennan, midi Michael McColgan, and goalie Ian Stefanowicz. Thoughts on what the Crimson have done?
Yeah, that class is, again, awesome. Carson Miller is one that I wasn't super familiar with.
Falls into that category of guys we, you know, kind of wish we had known more about.
And he's on our board. I have him labeled as a fringe. And I just hadn't seen a ton of the sample to know, like, more about him. But what you see is a three-sport athlete that I bet you he could score a touchdown, dunk a basketball, and score a lacrosse goal in the same day if you gave him the correct opportunity. He's that type of athlete that, you know, was really impressive. And then in terms of, like, the LSMs that they have coming in, like, those are the two best LSMs in the class. And Brian Burke, you could argue, is a defender, it moves back and forth. But to me, those are the two best LSMs in the class. They got them both. And so from that aspect, like, they have to be thrilled. Michael McColgan is a guy that potentially has one of the highest ceilings in the class from what he can do with his vision, his stick, and his athleticism. And then I don't know if this is true, but I heard he's also headed there to potentially play football as well.
Yeah. So apparently, like, right around the day he committed, his Culver team, of which he is the quarterback, won. I don't know if it was in overtime, but it was late. He scored the game winning touchdown and he put up like more than 400 yards combined passing and running. So, but Carson Miller is like in that ecosystem. Not like, first of all, he's from like Westchester County, so not like in the ecosystem. I just mean like he's in that, to your realm point, he's in that realm as far, he's totally. I think also a quarterback on the football team as well.
Beast. And then I really like the goalie that they added to that class out of Valor High School. Does his club ball with the Kings. I saw them at NLF. We've seen him a couple times on film as well. But I've been impressed with him over the years and wrote him up after that NLF appearance. And I just think that he's one that is really steady, really calm, really just like, I think a lot of times, like, there's a trend right now to talk about being like relaxed and, you know, just still and composed pre-shot. And I think he does an excellent job of that. And then therefore is like spry and quick right after.
From there, Notre Dame took over. They came in, as we've discussed, with two commits in this class. John Buttafuoco is a defender from Brunswick who was a 25 that reclassed to a 26. And then obviously, as we mentioned, with Faison as well. So they took a September 3rd commitment from Chaminade goalie Kieran Walsh, which, you know, no-brainer. Just looks so much like Liam Entenmann that it would have been hard to imagine him in any other uniform college-wise. On September 4th, they added a defender in Isles number 71 ranked player, Dylan Novak out of Malvern, a Big Four Triple H player. And then on September 6th, Hunter Metz, the lefty out of McDonough, number 7 overall. Just we'll talk a little bit more about him in a second. And then on September 9th, Joe Legas, the defender from Whitney High School in Sacramento, who plays for Advance and West Coast Stars, our number 6 ranked player in the class, a defender that I have spoken a lot about and spilled a lot of ink about over the course of the last year. So the Fighting Irish are number 1 in our class rankings right now, and I think that they've still got some more work to do. What do you make of what Kevin Corgan, Ryan Wellner, Chris Wojcik, and Ryder Garnsey have put together?
Yeah, really impressive. And I think, you know, they kind of started the dominoes for goalies taking Walsh. And again, you mentioned, you know, just the natural fit there. I totally agree. Metz is one that I think probably had a lot of interest and would have been able to kind of take his pick at a few different places. So for them to get him, I'm sure, is one that they're thrilled about. They also have his high school teammate, Luke Miller, in the 2025 class. And so he's one that I'm sure that as a pair that they're going to be thrilled to be able to add to, you know, their roster. And then defensively, Novak and Legas, I think, are very different. Whereas both of them, obviously, great cover defenders. But Novak brings a little bit more range to the table. I think in theory you could put him up and play LSM, whereas Joe is a little bit more of your like patented cover close defender. And I think the two of them make a complementary pair. But at the end of the day, both of them are just both really, really good defenders that have a knack for playing both like on ball, but a team brand of defense that in general, they're just going to be thrilled to get both of those guys as well.
Throughout the last 2 weeks, Maryland and Penn State have done a nice job putting together classes, but also we've seen what we call runs start to develop with respect to goalies and faceoff guys. And it was interesting because depending on the year, kind of one position group goes and then the other position group goes. And this year the goalies kind of went first. I do think that Kieran Walsh deciding to go to Notre Dame framed what Hunter Mezzatesta, our top-ranked goalie in the class, what his opportunities were. He ended up committing to Virginia. And Goalie Smith put out a tweet right around the time of his commitment saying that they had already been told that five of the top 25 programs weren't planning on taking a goalie in this class. And to my knowledge, that includes Duke, Syracuse, and Carolina, as well as Johns Hopkins, who had a 25 reclass. And then Villanova as well, I'm told, was the fifth group that they were referring to. So once you get Notre Dame and Virginia joining, basically the ACC is closed out. So now it becomes a Big Ten Ivy League opportunity in terms of the most compelling spots for a lot of these guys to land. And then, you know, we were interested in Ford Smith's decision on September 11th to verbal to Jacksonville, meaning that at faceoff and goalie, they are bringing in two of our more highly ranked players at each position. So thoughts on a combination of what Maryland and Penn State did or have done, as well as how the goalies and faceoff groups have worked out?
Yeah, I think I'll start with Maryland. Obviously, they've put together a really strong class, particularly in the midfield to start, full of athletes. And we've talked a ton about Drew DeMarini, and we think that that's a great fit for him as well. Brandon Williams, that Salisbury to Maryland pipeline is becoming something that's of note. And then among that, it's been really athletic midfielders as well. So two things that Maryland has been able to take advantage of there. And so that class is one that I think, again, you mentioned Notre Dame still has some work in front of them and some guys that we think that, potentially are leaning that way. I feel that way about Maryland. And I think that, you know, over time that class is going to continue to round out, but it's certainly off to a strong start.
One guy that you didn't mention that I'm curious of your thought on is Brad Barber.
Yeah. Yeah. His game is interesting. I think Maryland fans like make that quick connection to a different strong left-handed player from that Philly area that went and had a pretty prestigious career at Maryland. We've heard that comparison a few times. I think it's a staunch comparison, but is one that there is just room to make for all of those similarities. I think he's a powerful player and one that is just going to look, you know, really, really similar once you guys get them in that Maryland jersey. And then they also added, and I can't move on from this class without just hitting on this, they also added Luke Gauss. And I think one thing to note about his game is not necessarily on the draw, where obviously he's a strong player and, you know, a great faceoff specialist. But after the play, he is really offensive. He's definitely one of the more offensive-minded players that's taking faceoffs in this 2020 season.
All right, let's wrap it up by talking about Syracuse, because they have the biggest fan base in the sport, and there are probably a lot of Syracuse fans who are listening to this waiting for us to talk about their program. They added their third commitment in the class on this Thursday morning with Hanson Peck, the attackman from Lawrenceville, who has drawn some comparisons to Hunter Metz in this group. They're, you know, similar types of players, similar sized. As the cornerstone of the group, he is a five-star and joins a pair of four-stars that they got earlier in the month in Jaden Rodriguez and Nick Rayfield. What do you think about what the Orange have done?
Yeah, I think Rayfield is a great fit, one that they were probably feeling pretty confident about. I think he has some family ties to the university. And so he's one that I think just the way that they play, and obviously, like, there's so much fluency to their offense. He's a guy that's going to be able to jump in and kind of fill a bunch of different roles, and he could play and kind of attack with speed. But he's also great on the middle of the field, and he's great on wings, and he can do so much for them. I think he's a great fit for that team. And then Hanson Peck, you know, Syracuse has had no shortage of talented left-handed attackmen. Hanson Peck joins that group. And Jaden Rodriguez is one that is really dynamic. Again, like a guy that when you think about the Syracuse offense over the past few years, it's a ton of talented players that win matchups and can sling it. And I think Jaden Rodriguez fits that mold as well. And then before we move on, I missed on Penn State. I want to go back and hit that.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
Two four-stars already. one of which is one of the higher rated goalies that we have in Ryan Intzer. It seems a good fit there. And Kevin Piffith, another 4-star from Malvern Prep, which Malvern to Penn State defensively has become quite the pipeline. It's almost a layup. And with Kevin, he was one that I've been really impressed with over the course of the summer. We saw him really, really do well at ALL, and they won that championship there with his Team 10 team. But also, he was the main stage defensive MVP, and obviously, like, when you stack that onto your resume, you're going to garner plenty.
So, Dan, there are 64 players in the top 100 that are uncommitted, and as we mentioned, we've got a big week of visits coming up. We anticipate a good amount of activity over the course of the next week. So that's going to do it for this edition of the IL Preps podcast, but we're going to come back sooner than we did last time. We're not going to leave you hanging for another 2 or 3 weeks. We hope you've enjoyed the How Recruiting Works podcast series with the college coaches. Up this week were Brad Ross from Bryant, as well as Matt Brown from Denver, and we've got another lineup of those guys coming up next week as well.
Another D3 How It Works coming too.
There you go. Make sure that you check out the one that you had previously recorded. That was with Mikey Thompson and
Coach TC DiBartolo from McDaniel.
Yes. Dan, appreciate your time as always.
Thanks so much.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.